Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, December 4th, 2014. And with me today, I have my team of magical people.
The A-team.
No, that's right. My A-team. My team that that can get anything done but can't shoot to save their lives. That's right. Kelly Gaumont, how are you, Kelly?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. John Martellaro, how are you?
Good morning. The guru is here for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today, Smile Software, and I'm really looking forward to chatting about them in a little bit. And I'm assuming the timing will be perfect to separate you two and calm you down.
Hardly.
All right. The first thing that I wanted to take a look at is this piece that you wrote yesterday, John, about why it's time for Apple to produce their own HD television.
Well, for a long, long time, I've been a proponent of Apple doing this. There are people who think that Apple can't compete in the marketplace. The cutthroat pricing of high-definition TV sets, and no way they can compete with Vizio and even the lower-level brands. And so it doesn't make sense. Well, that's all rubbish. Apple brings a special flavor of human interface and integration and cool stuff to products that people like. And they're high-end stuff, and they make really good things, and there's no reason why Apple can't make a really good TV that people would desire. But beyond that, there's some technical reasons that I like for Apple to build its own TV. It can integrate the hardware and the software to create a new user interface, just like it created a new payment system by having its own iPhone 6 and folding in the NFC and using iOS and building in their passbook and integrating the payment system. So you have to control everything in order to remodel the user experience. And that's why I think Apple is going to build its own TV, so that they can control the video on the downstream side of the decryption. They can, maybe they'll build a 5K TV that's the blow up of the 5K iMac, and then there'll be room around the edges for your UHD image. And then there'll be stuff that you can have on the periphery, like, you know, weather status information, home automation information, all sorts of other cool things that they might do. If they can grab the downstream information from the decryption, they can do things like erase those obnoxious banner ads that some networks put at the bottom because you're watching this show, but they're not happy you're watching this show. They want to make sure you know about the next show that's going to be on, so they keep putting in these little pop-ups at the bottom. Sometimes they're even animated and they're really obnoxious. There's probably technical ways to erase those if you want to.
Yeah, many involve a hammer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've always thought that Apple could do something, and facial recognition too, like, you know, if you plant your cursor on somebody's face, it could go to facial recognition routine and then look them up in IMDb, and then on the side of this 4K image, you could put a little IMDb thing and say, this is so-and-so. I'm sure Apple has a lot of cooler things like that. So there was some evidence recently that came up that I was looking at. Gene Munster was talking about the fact that, you know, we've been thinking that Apple needed some sort of special content agreements, but they don't need it. They've already got good content agreements for the current Apple TV. There's a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows you can draw from. And Gene Munster is thinking that, you know, that Apple's going to bring its own brand of user interface to the system. And then what's going to happen is that the content that is designed to work with that special interface will come later. And the example he gives, this is Gene Munster from Piper Jaffray Investments, an analyst, says, well, look, when the iPod came out, you know, you had your crude little tool to rip music. And then later the iTunes store came along to supply the iPod with content. Same thing with the iPhone. When the iPhone first came out, you know, remember we were using Web 2.0 apps. It wasn't until quite a bit later that developers were able to do native apps, and then that spawned the Apple App Store. So Gene Munster's argument is that we don't really need content deals. We just need a fabulous new product like an iPod or an iPhone, and specialized content will come along later. And so that makes the case for, you know, Apple to create a great new platform, hardware and software elegantly integrated, for people to leverage off of. And I thought that was kind of a nice approach to it. And also, you know, it could be that we've got a chicken and an egg, as one of my readers said. You know, we don't have a lot of 4K content yet, so why should I buy a 4K? Actually, technically, it's UHD TV. 4K is 4096 across, and UHD TV is ultra high definition, 3880 across. So we should all be saying UHD TV. Excuse me if I say 4K. You got a chicken and an egg situation. So Apple produces this awesome iMac that is very useful tool for editing and creating UHD content, whether it's movies or TV shows, and sort of like solving the chicken and the egg problem. And so I think there's a link between Apple coming out first with this awesome iMac so people can create content, and then coming out later with their own TV. So that makes sense too. And that was the nature of my article yesterday.
All right. I think you presented some very compelling arguments. Nonetheless, I'm not totally buying it. And a big part of that comes down to, does Apple want its television efforts to fall into the niche market area, or do they want this to be widespread? And if they want it to be widespread, I think that something like a new version of the Apple TV box makes sense, because then they can sell it to everyone at a reasonable price, as opposed to selling really awesome, really expensive TVs to essentially a handful of people.
I have a counter to that argument. Look at the huge popularity of Apple Pay. But if you look at the percentage of transactions, it's only people who have iPhone 6s and iPhone 6 Plus, which is a small segment of the audience, mm-hmm. and only at currently participating merchants, which might be, you know, a couple dozen. So compared to all the transactions at this country, you know, grocery stores and Target and Walmart that don't use Apple Pay, it's a pretty small piece of the pie. And yet, Apple's making money. It's beloved. It's getting a lot of press. And it's going to have, and it's going to add momentum, and it's going to drive the industry towards Apple Pay. So I think Apple could do the same thing with the TV. They could seed something that's so cool that it'll pick up momentum. And guess what? Before long, Samsung's TVs will look just like it.
No. No, 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 no. Nobody, nobody, no. No, no, no. No, no. To sum up, no.
So what do you really think, Kelly?
No. Here's what I think. We started the podcast with John Matarlaro and we ended the podcast with Gene Munster. I'm very confused. Here's the thing. People beating this television drum are forgetting a very important thing about what Apple has done that made it successful in the last, let's say, 10 years. Apple built stuff that people then wanted to upgrade. If you bought an iPod in the first generation, in a couple, maybe 3 years, you buy another one because it's got twice the capacity, or it comes in a slightly different form factor, or it's not as heavy, or it's got this other thing that you want. You know, FM radio, it had video, it had a better screen, whatever. The iPhone, there are people who buy one every 2 years, like me, who do that on the subsidy so that they can afford to own that Apple product. There are people who buy them at full price every fall because they want to have the latest and greatest and they're happy to pay that premium. People don't buy TVs every 2 years. Not even every three, not even every five.
I think the average is 8 years.
Yeah.
Kelly, and it used to be 10. I already have a counter argument.
The only reason it has dropped from, I think it was 11 years, 10 or 11 years, to 8 years is because a lot of people bought flat screens when all of the over-the-air broadcasting went digital and the old TV wasn't going to be able to receive channels anymore. So that's the only reason that average has dropped the way that it has. And Apple doesn't need to be in a market where people buy a computer once every 10 years. And the reason we know that is because Apple has effectively more or less given up on the Mac Pro. I don't think I'm telling anybody things they don't already know. It doesn't get updated. It doesn't get the love it's supposed to get. And here's the thing is that I'm happy. I had a second gen Apple TV. And when the third gen Apple TV came out, and it was 1080p, which is the thing we were really waiting for, I immediately turned around and bought another one because it was $99. And Apple found a way to put something new into the new box that the old box didn't have, and now I had to have one. And because it was $99, I have found that a number of people in my social circles have what's called the spousal acceptance factor. And that is the magical purchase point at which you must receive approval from the other person
purchase
in your house.
Authority.
Yes, in order to buy this thing. And for a lot of people, that's $100. So at $99, you ain't got to ask, yo. So it's the perfect device. It works with any television. And more importantly, you can buy another one for the other TV or the other TV.
Kelly, here's why you're wrong.
Okay, why?
Apple Watch.
You spend
$700 on a Breitling or a Tag Heuer. How long do you expect it to last? Are you going to spend $700 on a Breitling watch and then buy a new one next Christmas? No, you're not.
Do you know why? No.
So the Apple Watch is not a product that Apple's expecting you to update every year. So with the TV, why should they expect you to do that too?
But here's the thing. The Breitling watch isn't going to let me buy stuff. Number one. Number two, what the Breitling watch does for me right now at $700 is tell me the time. When I look at it, I know what time it is. Maybe it's got the date, and maybe I can do so in the dark. There's no revolutionary paradigm shift.
That's not the point. Apple's getting into the luxury watch market, and they expect that you're not going to buy one every year. So
no.
I think they
hired all these
experts. People are going to buy one every
year. That's not the luxury watch market, John. It's the fashion market. Which is very different because the fashion market expects you to buy a new pair of shoes every 3 months at several $100s. And people do it. I am not those people. But people do it.
Oh, Apple's going to get nowhere. Apple's going to get nowhere if they charge you $550 for a Sapphire watch, the middle-level Apple watch for $550 with a Sapphire display. You're not going to buy another one. The spousal approval is not going to be there for you to buy another one next year. And Apple has to recognize that.
I'm here to tell you that Jimmy Choo and Christian Louboutin are probably both violently disagreeing with you at this moment, like either of them listen to this show. But both of them are disagreeing with you. Karl Lagerfeld over at Chanel is disagreeing with you. All of the people who put out new clothes twice a year and people buy them in not insignificant numbers are totally disagreeing with you right now.
You guys are ganging up on me. I feel kind of oppressed here.
You're still loved. You might be wrong, but you're still loved.
I love you, John. You're just incorrect.
I'm right, actually.
No, you're just incorrect. That's the problem. Apple has never been – Apple themselves, when it comes to their own stuff, so App Store notwithstanding because that's not exclusively their domain. When you talk about Apple hardware is moving toward – every couple of years, maybe you buy a new one. And the TV would screw all of that up. The TV would screw that up in so many different ways.
You can't get control of and improve the user experience unless you have the whole widget under your control.
Yes, you can.
That is the display hardware and the display electronics and the input and the character of the display and what you do with the video signal. You can't fundamentally change the experience with a device, a little black box on the outside that fights for that precious HDMI port along with the Chromecast and the Amazon Fire TV and the Roku boxes. That's a losing game. You can't change the user experience from the outside.
Most people don't have all of those things hooked up to one television, first of all. They've all basically picked one.
I'm just saying as an example, those things are little stupid little boxes that connect to the HDMI port of the TV and they don't have a chance in heck of
but you know how I fixed the UI
experience of television.
Do you know how I fixed the horrible Panasonic UI on my Panasonic television? I push the Apple TV button on my remote and it's all better. And I do everything in the Apple TV instead. Yeah,
up to a point,
so
but that's why they're calling
do.
It a hobby is because they haven't seized control of the whole user experience. That's why it's a hobby, Kelly.
Except
but
the
it doesn't make sense
hobby,
to do anything
but,
otherwise.
Well, yeah,
and they have stopped now. $1 billion. Can't call it a hobby anymore.
I'm not saying they're going to not come out with another generation of Apple TV because that $99 thing is pretty compelling. And they may in the future come out with a, you know, an Apple TV that can do 4K and downstream 4K and all that stuff. That's, I'm not saying they won't do that. I'm just saying that Apple has a history, as with, you know, the Macintosh and with the Apple Watch and with Apple Pay, of vastly improving our user experience. And you can't do
John,
that.
John, there's no history with the Apple Watch.
You let the TV manufacturer control the vertical and control the horizontal.
There's no history with the Apple Watch. You can't trot that out as an example of something when it hasn't happened yet.
Well, I trot it out as an example of Apple's recognition that people aren't going to be spending a whole lot of money to replace their watch every year.
That's, seriously? You're going to try and tell me that after Apple has been spending a year selling, how, what is it, $800 64 gigabyte iPhones at full price?
If I buy a Sapphire Crystal Apple Watch for $550, maybe more, if I were, I can guarantee you that I won't be buying another one in 2016. I expect it to last.
Why
especially
not?
Especially since it's made of stainless steel and it's upgradable.
Okay. What about the phones? I'm telling you. People phones buy a new phone at full price
are,
every
phones
year.
Phones are a phenomena. You have to have an iPhone to work with your watch. So you upgrade your iPhone every year because it's a computer in itself and it does everything you need it to do.
A then watch, why do you need a new one?
A little extension. That's the right way. I mean, you know, you wave your hand at Panera Bread with your Apple Watch to pay, you're done. You have a new iPhone in your pocket every year because the technology is rapidly changing. The Apple Watch is a very limited device. It doesn't have a lot of computational power. It doesn't have a lot of battery power. It's designed
because
to be an extension.
Is the brain of it.
It's designed to just to be a display and an extension of that power in your pocket for the iPhone.
Yeah.
And so vastly improving the iPhone every year, the Apple Watch every year, given its limited capabilities and tying to an iPhone and its lack of battery power and lack of display size, doesn't make sense. You can't reinvent the Apple Watch every year like you can the iPhone.
But you can make it thinner. You can add more sensors so that it can track more data. You can give it better battery life. It can have radios that link up to more than it can link up right now.
It can have the radio. It can have a faster processor so that you're getting those things even better. It can have a better speaker so that you can do other things.
You might have a good argument there if the Apple Watch sold for $99 and you had was below the spousal approval threshold. Sure, buy an Apple Watch every year for $99. That's the way to go, right?
The iPhone isn't below spousal approval threshold, and that's not stopping anybody, John.
That's an essential factor of life. I mean, you know, smartphones are part of our culture. We got to have that. But people have lots of different views about what kind of a wristwatch they need.
And Apple's hoping to change that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure, all right. So sure. I have to cut this off because I want to make sure that that we hit our other topic today too, because I'm excited about that. But before
it's
we hit the other topic, I'm going to tell everyone that I'm really pleased that Smile is our sponsor this week, specifically their PDF Pen Scan Plus 1.5 app for the iPhone and iPad. And what I love about this app is that it essentially takes your iPhone or iPad and turns it into a scanner in your pocket, which is like totally awesome. And it's an app that I've been using for quite a while, in many cases as my primary scanner, even though I have a flatbed scanner sitting here in my office. I love that that from your iPhone, you can take a photograph of a document, crop it so that you have just the parts you need, straighten it up so it looks right. And if it's a typed document, then you can let the app right on your iPhone OCR it so you have editable text.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And then you can.
It's so good.
It really is. It is akin to magic. And then once you have these documents that you've scanned, now you can save them back to Dropbox or iCloud. So they're available to all of your other devices. And it's just a wonderfully useful application.
And for people who are curious, your iPhone camera for a number of revisions now. So even if you don't have an iPhone 6, if you have a 4 or a 4S, you have a camera that is more than powerful enough to take a reasonable picture of a typed document or a laser printed document and turn it into a completely readable PDF. It is more than possible. I've been doing it since I got my iPhone 4. And yes, the quality has improved slightly, but I'm still basically getting the same thing. And it's just as readable on the older stuff that I scanned with my 4 as it is on what I've got now with my 5S. And I love it.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. So I'm going to have a link back to PDF Pen Scan Plus 1.5 in the show notes today. And thank you so much for Smile for sponsoring our show. Those guys really rock.
They're so fantastic.
All right. So the other topic that I wanted to hit, and we'll have to make this quicker than I had wanted, but But nonetheless, Kelly, you live in what appears to be a test market for Starbucks because you're getting to do something that I can only dream of right now. What is that?
Where I live is the future, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And what I can do in Portland, Oregon, is order my Starbucks order before I ever get there, and then roll in, skip the line, and pick it up. It's amazing. It is so good. So here's how it works. I did it this morning to see, because yesterday afternoon an update was pushed for the Starbucks app. And when I first glanced at the release notes for it, all I saw was the menu is back. And I said, oh, thank God, because that's the thing that I generally open the app for. I usually use, when I want to pay, I just use the card and passbook. So then I saw that it said that there's mobile ordering also in Portland, Oregon. So I went this morning, and what I did was just before I left the house, I decided I wanted a venti coffee and a bacon breakfast sandwich. Hope I'm not giving anything away there.
Bacon.
And because bacon. And it said it will take here's the beauty of it. It said it will take about this long. I think it was like 2 to 5 minutes for your order to be ready. And then it said it will take you 6 minutes to get there because it knew where I was and where the nearest store was.
Oh my God.
You really do live in the future.
Right. So I said, okay. So I finished my order once I went through the order process. And here's one of the things that I really like about it is that, you know how a lot of times in order to get the thing that you want at Starbucks, you have to be overly specific. So I want, you know, a venti iced tea sweetened but with light ice, and that's a lot of words. And so you can save the customizations that you have on your order. So it needs to be soy, it needs to be light ice, it needs to be no ice, it needs a sprinkle of cinnamon, it needs a twist of lemon, whatever it is that you normally have to spend a bunch of time and back and forth ordering. You don't have to do that. You can just save it in the app. And then you go, bam, and it orders you the, what's the one my mom likes? The sugar-free mocha light frappuccino, no whip or whatever. So she can save all that in the app if she lived here. And then it sends the whole thing off as a mobile order. So then what you do is you drive to Starbucks. And when you're at Starbucks, you can either walk in or drive through. This is the second bit of magic here is you still don't have to get out of the car if you don't want to. I went inside just to be sure because I was nervous that maybe there was some sort of failure. So I walked in and there was one of the baristas who had come down to the far end of the counter. There's like a bunch of people in line. And she looked up and recognized me and she said, oh, hi. And I said, hey, I just ordered with my phone. And she goes, oh, right, Kelly, I just took your sandwich out. Here it is. Hands me my sandwich and says, your coffee will be ready at the end of the bar. And wow. By the time I got to the end of the bar, and keep in mind that there's like 8 people in line right now who are all staring at me like, what did you just do?
Did the app take your picture, Kelly, and send it to the barista?
No. The barista recognized me. It says in the app that when you get there, you tell them, hi, I'm Kelly. I have a mobile order. And so I went to the other end of the bar by the espresso machine. And she goes, hey, Kelly, did you have a venti coffee? I said, yeah. So she goes, 1 second. We had a problem with it because you ordered, I don't remember what I ordered, but it wasn't on today. So she said, we have this other one instead. Is that fine? I said, yeah, it's totally fine. So she gave it to me. I asked her if they'd had a lot of mobile orders, and she said, not yet. And I said, can you do this in the drive-thru? And she said, yeah, whatever. When you roll up to the speaker, just tell us, I'm Kelly, I have a mobile order. And when you get up there, we'll hand it to you. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. So it is amazing. It's test here through the end of the year. They're going to start rolling it out in limited locations, I think, sometime next year. I saw an interview with someone at Starbucks who was behind the mobile stuff. And what they had said about it was the reason for Portland was because there's a mix of locations for the stores. So like the one that I go to is in a primarily industrial area. There are some that are like right in downtown Portland. You know, there's some that are like in malls around here. So there's a lot of variety of where the locations are, and there's a wide variety of people that also use those locations and use Starbucks cards to pay on a pretty regular basis. So they figured that this was a good test market, and also I think it's probably small enough. I know for Starbucks that sounds funny, but they have 150 locations here. They said, you know, it's a small enough market that we can roll it out in Portland and it won't be a problem. And it was great. You can flip through the whole menu. Now, they don't give you a description of everything in the menu, so you have to know what you want. If you need to browse the menu, that's a different place. But you can, if you know the thing that you're looking for, you just put it in. And if you're somebody who is a creature of habit, like I'm pretty partial to the bacon, you know, I can save that order of the venti coffee and the bacon breakfast sandwich. And then all I have to do is go, yeah, send it off to Starbucks with my Starbucks card. Another piece of the process is that you have to confirm the store you're ordering from. So if it's not, you know, you're the one around the corner, you're on your way somewhere else and you want to pick it up along the way or whatever, or when you get to where you're going and you want to, you know, pick up one of those great big traveler things of coffee that they have when you get to wherever it is that the meeting is, you can do that too. It's really great. Somebody really spent a lot of time thinking about what kind of magic do I want to have working in the Starbucks app. And this is just another one of those avenues where I am continually impressed at the ease with which Starbucks allows me to give them money.
That is awesome. We are like way over time, but I just really wanted you to share your story about that. And okay, so to wrap up, what I want to see happen next is the ability for me to pick up my phone and say, Siri, order my Starbucks, and then I can go to the store. So just think on that. And Kelly, thank you for joining me today.
Certainly.
And John, thank you for joining me today. Sorry we beat up on you a little bit.
It was a pleasure. It was great. Good discussion.
It was a good discussion. And thank you to Smile for being our sponsor this week. They make great products. So go to the link that I'm going to include in the show notes and check them out. And we will see everyone again tomorrow.